I'm with Professor Leonard Collard, known better, I think, as Len, is that right?
Yeah.
Len, thanks very much for talking to Fremantle Shipping News. You're a senior Noongar man, is that right?
I think so, yeah.
And
some people call me elder and pop and whatnot, so I suppose. Yeah, I think there's a few older than me, of course, but
yeah. And you belong to a particular group within the Noongar peoples?
Yeah, well, my mum's family were Bennells. And Bennells, you might remember, were the people that lodged the native title claim over the Perth metropolitan area. Tony Bennell, my brother Tony, well, the Bennells, through my mum's family. So we can, you know, we can trace our family through my nana, my mum Jean Collard, or her mum was Muriel Bennell, or Muriel Maguire, and her mum was Dulluk Bennell, and we can go further back.
Yep.
So in the female line of my family, we've got connection to the Whadjuk clans of the what today is known as the Swan River, or the Perth metropolitan area and surrounding districts, which includes Fremantle, blah, blah, blah. On my dad's family, Fred Collard, his mum was ashore, and the shores were given land by James Stirling in the Upper Swan, up at the property called Belver.
They were white settlers, were they?
Yeah, yeah, they came out on the early boats here to Port of Fremantle, I suppose, or maybe not have been a port then, it might have been just a sort of a sandhill or something. And James Stirling was allocating land to the colonies of the day, and so the Shaw family were given the property up at the Upper Swan. And so the women in that family had children to the Shaw boys, and if you might remember, up at Belver is where Yagan was murdered, and Yagan, the women in Yagan's tribe are the women that have children to the Shaw boys. So I think you can clearly deduct that the women in Yagan's family are, well, we must be related to Yagan somehow, but it's back in the midst of time. And but we do know is that Mary Balopon, the woman, was from the Upper Swan, and she was part of Yagan's family.
Now, you mentioned Whadjuk territory, and you mentioned it picks up Fremantle as well, and you've been a Fremantle resident, I think, for some time.
Well, my old man and my old lady, they bought land in Sampson Street in the 60s, I can't remember what year it was, might have been 61 or something.
That's it, Sampson Street, Wightgum Valley.
Yeah, Sampson Street, and he was fortunate enough that he worked for a farmer in and around Brookton, Alan Evans, and basically Alan said, as the story goes to the family, probably best to shift down to the city and get your kids an education and whatnot. So my dad got X amount of £1,000 off him, or lent it to him, or whatever he did, and they purchased a house in Sampson Street, and so that's where we basically grew up, and we were. What was ironical is that we were Noongars that actually owned private property, and I know when I talked to other Noongars that were dependent on rents or government housing, I think we had a solid foundation to live our lives on our private property.
So you were growing up in Whitegum Valley and around Frio, what, in the 60s?
In the 60s, yeah.
Yeah.
So some of the older siblings, there's nine in our family. Some of them... some went to Wycombe Valley Primary School and then headed off to John Curtin. But by the time I went to high school, South Mail Senior High School had been constructed. And so, so there's a bit of a split in the family. Some of the older ones went to John Curtin and the rest of us went to South Mail.
Well, I think I introduced you as Professor Leonard Collard, which makes you sound like a different person altogether, doesn't it? But you're at UWA, University of Western Australia, and what is the work that you're doing there at the moment?
Well, I work in the School of Indigenous Studies, led by Professor Jill Milroy. Jill's actually, she's a Fremantle resident, probably might be worth having a chat with her about her experience as a Fremantle person. Jill basically came and had talked to me one day and asked me to come up and join the team at the School of Indigenous Studies. And I was a research professor at that time. I was looking into carbon economies and Aboriginal training and how it might relate. I also worked on, I had a grant to do Noongar place names of Southwest Australia. So the Budjar.com website is where you can go to have a look at that work. And what else was I doing? I was doing another project. Noongarpedia.
I'm looking at...
Which is one that I'm working on currently.
Oh, right. I'm looking at the UWA staff profile on the internet as we speak, and you've got an amazing publications list, if I can say so. Can I ask you this? As you were growing up, thinking back to, say, when you were a 10-year-old, you were at what, Whitcomb Valley Primary School, had you begun to learn then about your Noongar history and how did you learn about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, when the family was in Brookton, there was a lot of Noongars in Brookton, and it was, I think if you know, read Jack Davis's work, he talks about Brookton and he describes Brookton as a stronghold or a bastion of Noongar culture. At our age, we were still fortunate to have lots and lots of nanas and pops and uncles and aunties that all spoke Noongar. And so the question, when did you learn? Well, I don't know. I suppose I learned when I was in my mum's belly, I think. So as you grow up, you just grow up, you know, normally within the values and the circumstances of your family. So, you know, so it's a bit of an odd question to say, well, when did you start learning about your culture? I think we were learning the whole time. So when I can remember when we went to Wycombe Valley Primary School, because I was born in late December in 59. So when I was 5 years old, I went to school. But I was four and I just turned five, and a month or so later, I'm at school. And so I kind of, looking back now, I think I was clearly disadvantaged because I was kind of early five and other crew, they were five going on to six type thing. So, I mean, at that age, as you can tell, there's quite a big difference. And and I think, in a sense, it set me back. I didn't have the maturity, I think, because of those circumstances. And I know the teachers, they were always pretty quick to seem to draw the ruler out and give you a whack on the hand because you didn't write properly or listen properly or, you know, you're sitting asleep in your chair.
Well, you wrote with your left hand or something. Yes.
And I know I can clearly remember one time when I got whacked, and I sort of remembered in my mind, that I wasn't really happy about getting belted. And I reckon if my mum would have known about it, she might have went up there and had a chat with that lady. Now, even though in those days, sparing the rod wasn't necessarily the case. It was more like drag it out and whack them first.
Well, you obviously remedied that early sense about education, and you became quite learned, and you hold the position you hold today. There must have been a point at which you decided to become more involved in things to do with Noongar culture and the academic side and the research side and the interpretive work that you've been involved in. When did that first start to happen?
Well, as I say, I think that was always the case. We were always wanting to learn and know more, and whether you know, you had a choice or not. Well, maybe we didn't really have a choice because the oldies.
Yeah. You know, and how did you get involved?
They spoke to us in Noongar, and so, well, if your grandparents are talking to you, would you pay attention?
Yeah.
And okay, like any kid, you know, I'm sure in Fremantle that grew up from the, you know, from the ethnic families that came here, the migrant families, I mean, I'm sure they must have had to go through the same process.
Yes.
They had to probably learn to speak, you know, Portuguese or Italian or,
whatever the language was. Yeah.
So,
did you have particular people in your family who encouraged you to pursue the line that you've finished up taking?
Yeah, well, I think you know, like a lot of people, that I think the grandparents have a fair bit of influence. I remember as a little kid, you know, you had some of the family would be talking about you know, skin colour, and of course. In my case, I wasn't that dark, and you're trying to get teased, like, you know, you're a white fella, and I remember talking to my Nana Meryl and telling her about it, and of course, as she was, she basically cuddled me up and said to me, well, you know, you're a Noongar, and we'll teach you how to speak Noongar, and then that'll be it. So, you know, if there were seminal times in your life, I mean, they're things that I can remember that really yes. obviously hit the mark and maybe created an impression on me to be interested and stay interested. And of course, as life went along, you travel back to Brooklyn or wherever, out to, you know, Wagen or Pingerley or Condinan or Kellerberrin or wherever you're going to, you're always going to see relations. And so, you know, as a little kid, because remember, we still weren't at school. This is before we went to school, so we would have to go with our parents or grandparents because you couldn't stop home because the other kids had gone to school. So, oh, okay, we'll go for a ride out there. And, of course, you met all your relations. And, you know, there were times when the people would talk about, oh, the little fair-skinned fellas there, you know, hanging around with Auntie Jeannie or whatever, which was my mum. Well, who are they? And so that issue of belonging, of course you want to belong, you don't want to be an outsider, you want to belong. And so one of the ways I think my Nana explained to me at the time was, well, we'll teach you how to speak so you'll be okay. And so whether or not that was a conscious and unconscious decision, and on top of that they were speaking to you anyway, so of course you learnt. And by the time you get, you know, you sort of go to school, you know, you have your little Wadjila mates there. One of my friends, Rodney Parrott, who lived in Watkin Street, and Craig Pearce was in the next street north of Watkin Street. What's that street? Whatever it was. You know, you'd meet those guys, and, you know, because we didn't really speak proper English, of course. We spoke Australian Noongar, or Noongar Australian, and so people, we'd be talking to them, you know, oh boy, we had a good feed of yongle the other night, and blah, 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 and the little buggets, and, you know, using words like that. Well, they'd say, well, what are you saying? And so our style of speaking was couched in what we were taught. And it was only, I guess, you realise, oh, well, these white fellas, they don't really talk like us. And so, you know, the other kids would be interested in, you know, this Aboriginal culture stuff and this Noongar culture. And, you know, if they come to our place, Mum might be cooking a damper and some kangaroo and whatnot, and, of course, have a feed. Well, that's nice. And they go and tell their parents back home, the parents would freak out, what are you eating, cow? So there was always that interchange going on, and that was part of life. I mean, it wasn't abnormal. That was normal. You know, your friends would ask you words, yeah. So you tell them. And so, in a sense, you kind of get, you know, drawn in because of the strata. Oh, Colin, you're Aboriginal, or you're a Boong, you should know this. So you actually kind of get stereotyped into allegedly knowing something. So if you didn't know,
you better go, well,
go find out. Because, you know, people will be asking you questions. And so eventually, you know, I guess as you go along in life, you realise that the ancient knowledge of the family was important.
Yes.
And it wasn't something that you leave by the side of the road, and you take it with you. So even if you learn how to read and write in English, which was damn important, what was even just as important was to make sure you maintain your language and your appreciation for the old culture.
Going to Fremantle, as you were saying earlier, you've lived around about Fremantle for a long time now, and there are plenty of other Aboriginal and Noongar people who live around about too. Do you feel a particular closeness to this area?
This is home, isn't it?
Yeah. And does it come from a Noongar identity as well?
Well, there isn't any other identity I can talk about. I mean, I can only talk about my Noongar identity. Yeah. So, Of those questions, in a sense, they're... how do you describe a question that's not relevant?
Yeah, irrelevant question.
That's right, you're the judge. They're irrelevant questions because, I didn't suddenly one day decide, oh, I want to be a Noongar. I already was a Noongar, so... and I was living in my homeland, so was it important to me? Well, I think so.
You were talking about place names earlier and that you became involved in a research project. And I'm assuming, and I've read a whole lot of place names for around and about Fremantle, generally speaking. Mm. Are there particular places here that are of more importance than others to Noongar people?
In Fremantle, all of Fremantle is important. What was interesting when I did some work for the Fremantle City Council, we did a check of the place names, the street names, the names of this, that, and the other. And I think we came to the conclusion that there wasn't actually any streets in the city of Fremantle of Noongar origins. So the council, when they put the road across the railway line there down at the fish markets, Wardan Lane is a Noongar street, which I had the privilege to name, and hence the council put it to Landgate and they accepted Wardan Lane as the street name, and Wardan means ocean, so the ocean laneway.
When you were doing that work and making those inquiries, that research, who are the sorts of people that you did consult?
Well, the tricky thing with the brief for that work was that I needed to submit some ideas about it. Now, the thing is that if I have a moral obligation, that if I'm going to go and bother some people for intellectual property, my standpoint is that I need to remunerate those people for their trouble. And Wardan Lane was actually not a funded task. It came about because my daughter Mia worked at the council, and someone at the council asked her if she could figure something out, but they didn't have any resources, so my daughter said, "Dad, can you do it as a favour?" And so I said, "Okay, well, I'll come up with a suggestion," which I did. So I didn't actually consult anybody.
Thank goodness
there's been no hue and cry about it. But now Wardan Lane is an official place name or road name.
And that's its origin. It means the ocean. Often when I'm driving south from Fremantle on the Forest Highway, I go across a bridge called Windich Bridge. And there's now a lot of Aboriginal names as you go down there. And some of them are quite long and difficult to pronounce for a Wadjula.
But for Noongar sometimes.
And for Noongars too. Windich, do you know this guy? I think you, looking down your list of work,
Windich was the bloke that worked with John Forrest, Twiggy Forrest's family. And there was a number of prominent Noongars that worked with Forrest in his exploration days, and Tommy Windich was one of them. And if you read the diaries of Forrest, basically he said that on all of his expeditions into the inland, that he the first person he consulted with before he did anything was Windich and Noongar Kicket and Tommy Pierre. He, in his own right handwriting, said these guys were the best bushmen in the colony, black or white.
Mm.
And so I suppose when they built Forest Highway, I guess they felt it was important to put Windich up. But of course, the fans of Noongar Kicket and the others, they'd be saying, "Well, where's our place? where's his name emblazoned on some big bridge or something?" But it'll happen.
It's a pretty serious job naming places. You wouldn't want to do it, would you?
There's plenty of Kickets around, as you know.
So yeah, they'll come forward.
Because
yeah.
The thing about place names, the Fremantle deserves more of them. And so it'd be, it would be, like in any task of naming things, it's a subjective exercise. Charlie Brown wants to do a subdivision. He calls it Brown Street. And then he calls it Charlie and he calls it whatever he wants. But, as things occur, you'll probably see more of this stuff going on.
Yeah. There's the William Burrough Park that's now been completed a few years ago, I think, which, as I understand, it's a recognition of
Norman. I'm not 100% sure of the origin, but I think someone took it out of Daisy Bates's work. Boyan is rocks. I'm not sure what the back bit is.
Pretty rocky up there.
Yeah, well, when I was a kid growing up in Sampson Street, that was a limestone hill. You could see the ocean. You still can if you walk up the top there where the golf goes on. But that whole hill was excavated, obviously, or the limestone was ripped out and carted off, and then they turned it into a rubbish dump. And I know, because I was there, I saw the trucks backing in with all that asbestos, and they dumped it in that hole. And, of course, they covered it all up. And God help the residents that live across the road, because I would imagine that plenty of that dust has blown around their backyard. But, Boyanborough Park, that came about. Gorda Wirrenup is where the cantonment hill is. That's a dog spirit, the spirit of the dog that resides there. And of course, it's ironical that the South Mount Footy Club got a dog as their symbolic sort of,
the bulldogs. Yeah.
And then they got that other brass dog there down at the harbour, at the port, and the man. There is a spirit of a dog, and of course we know the old wives' tale that Bondi painted the big red dog.
The dingo.
Yeah. So, there's these underlying synergies going that people don't always make connection to, but I guess, from the subjective Noongar point of view, the Dreamtime dog.
Well, this year, indeed for many years, there's been quite a debate around Australia about Australia Day and whether it disrespects Indigenous people of this country. And the Fremantle Council recently proposed, and I think that this year there's going to be one day instead of on the 26th, on the weekend. Yeah, what are your feelings? Can you speak generally about that topic?
The problem with the celebration of Australia Day, it's symbolic of other agendas, and of course for Aborigines in Australia and in Fremantle, but Aborigines around the world. I mean, there is now, I think, a voice saying, "Hang on, there's other feelings and emotions tied up in this," and Australia Day should be celebrated every day as Australians. But on the other hand, on the 26th of January, it's a day that for a long time around Australia has been subjected to difference of opinion. And so, without going to say, if you go and look at Australia Day, well, you'll find Invasion Day, you'll find a whole bunch of other versions of the same day right around Australia. So this view that, there is only one set of values that's reflected around Australia, well, go on the net and have a look. I mean, there's a whole different bunch of opinions, and the good thing about it is that we live in a democracy, and in a democracy you can express your feelings and your thoughts and your views on any given matter. And so, I guess Noongars might say, your day of celebration is your day, and for us we've got a different meaning and a different interpretation, and we'll have our opinion expressed on that. And the good news, of course, is that there's plenty of multimedia and social media, and people can air their view out there. And if you go down on the 26th and celebrate, I'll be there celebrating with you, and I'll be there on the 27th and the 28th and every other day.
Is there a particular day that that Noongars tend to celebrate for themselves?
Probably their birthday.
There's the odd sorry day, I suppose, that...
There's a whole bunch of stuff, as come up in the last 10 or 20 or 30 or 50 years, whatever. And, you know, people want to express, you know, express feelings and thoughts and emotion, and that's, we're an emotional country. Poor old Christopher Columbus in America, he gets a bit of a flogging these days from the Aborigines, and so it's not a thing that's only in Australia. I mean, if you look globally and internationally, there's, you know, the Catalonians there in Chile, and I mean, I'm sure you've been to Spain. I mean, there's a particular flag that hangs down, it's not a Chilean flag. Mm. And so the conversations that we're having around Australia, they, these are global matters all around the world. Mm. There are different opinions. Mm. You know, Christopher Columbus Day is Native American.
Mm. They're not happy about it. Yeah, yeah.
And hence Australia Day is Aboriginal Australians, it's Invasion Day, whatever it is.
So far as Fremantle as a community is concerned, are there things that the Indigenous people here would like to see pursued, achieved, that sort of thing?
Oh, well, I think some Noongars and Aborigines, Yamajis, Wongai, Mulbas, whatever, they'd be more than happy just to stick with the mainstream idea. On the other hand, there's others that, you know, probably want to do whatever they want, but I hadn't necessarily gone around and consulted people to say, what do you want? But you do read it on social media.
Yes.
So there's a divergence of views.
Yes.
Just like in the council, when they made the decisions, there's a divergence of views. And just like when you read the press or you look on any social media, there's a divergence of views.
Mm-hmm.
So if you say, well, what is the Noongar position? Which position are you talking about? There's lots of positions.
Yeah.
There is no one position on this.
Mm. Now, just tell me, coming back to the position that you now hold, what's the nature of your current research?
Well, at the moment, I've just finished the Placelands one, and my latest one now, I'm working with Curtin University and UWA are collaborating. There's Professor Kim Scott, Professor John Hartley, there's Ingrid Cumming, research associate. Ingrid's my daughter, she works over at Curtin with Professor Kim Scott. Jennifer Buchanan's my research assistant. And so we've been working on the Noongarpedia, and Noongarpedia is one of those kind of modern ways of transporting intergenerational cultural values. And so the Noongarpedia is about Noongar knowledge. And so Noongar knowledge, in this case, is a site that any person can go to. It's not a race-driven model. You can go onto the site and you can contribute to the Noongarpedia around things that might interest you. So if you're someone that's interested in sort of native title discussion and you've got something to share specifically about the Noongar native title stuff, go for it. It's a site that, around Noongar knowledge, but Noongar knowledge is as contaminated and influenced by English, but at the same time Noongar contaminates and influences English to the way that we speak today, which is Southwest Australian. And you know, when you go visit your mates over in Melbourne and Sydney, they don't necessarily speak the same Australian as us. And so, the words in the Australian vernacular are heavily influenced by the Aboriginal tribes and the languages in those places. And so what we're doing here is following that tradition, and we're saying that anybody wants to learn or contribute to Noongar knowledge through the Wikipedia, or the Noongarpedia, sorry. There is no such thing as a Noongar Wikipedia, it's a Noongarpedia. Go along and have a look, see.
It sounds like an absolutely fascinating project. Is there a timeline for it? By the sound of it, it'll go on.
No, look, that's an intergenerational knowledge transference model. Basically speaking, Ingrid and Jennifer have been going to schools, you know, working with young kids, for example, up at Hilton Primary School. And, you know, so the idea that, you know, kids who might be, whether they're Noongar kids or not, or other Aboriginal kids or little Wadjalup fellas or whatever, they can all go and learn about Noongar knowledge on the Noongarpedia. And so it's a new, latest cutting-edge model to transfer cultural values and ideas through the, you know, through the computer system. So the good news is that someone, for example, in England or someone in Afghanistan or you know, in Ireland, they too can be Noongar Pedians.
Mm. And on that topic of educating kids at school, is there, undoubtedly there is, since you were a kid at primary school, much more taught about Aboriginal history and Noongar history around the southwest of this state, or am I making assumptions? Is there sufficient? Is there enough?
Well, I mean, you mentioned a bloke named Forrest, didn't you?
Mm.
Well, Forrest tells us in his field diaries when he was stuck and he was just about at the end of his road because they couldn't get water, who was the men that led him to the water and picked him up and put him back on his horse and took him out and brought him back.
Mm.
They were Noongars.
And
the thing about it is so when you tell the tale of, you know, our Premier, you know, Sir John Forrest, that's who we're talking about. You know, if you talk about, you know, Aussie rules, you know, if you're an Eagle supporter, you know, the guy that kicked 5 goals off the wing, he was a Noongar. You know, if you go down and look at all the Anzac memorial sites, Noongars are plastered all over those. And so Noongars have played an absolute mainstream role in building the capacity of this nation to be the great place that we are today. So the idea that, you know, Noongar history is some alien thing that nobody knows about, that's not the story that I'm talking about. I'm talking about Noongars built this nation. And that's why, it's a good place, because our people are part and parcel of the building of the national infrastructure. Our people not only worked with the explorers, but they cleared the country, they shore those sheeps, they looked after the farmers' kids. Noongars played an absolutely crucial role. And you can't write those sorts of people out of history.
Lynn, I'm most grateful to you for talking to me, and that's a wonderful note to finish on.
Perfect.
Thank you very much.
Just to say, my wife Lisa and my daughter Ingrid and Mia and my granddaughters Olivia and Jennifer and Hayley, we're all here still in the Whadjuk country.
Wonderful.
Perfect.
Thanks very much.